Lights, camera, action.
And the winner is...
Welcome back to the Oscar Real Movie Podcast, bonus edition. Newer movies are coming out. Well, they're always coming out, but it's like award season, and we just wanted to have fun and talk about newer movies along with the Best Picture ones. So per episode, we'll probably put in a couple newer reviews into one episode and release it every once in a while. Today, we've got Palmer... I Care a Lot, coming the number two, America, and Nomadland. So let's start off talking about Palmer. So this is, it came out I get all my years mixed up, the beginning of 2021, so January 29th, 2021 on Apple TV, stars Justin Timberlake, Juno Temple, Alicia Wainwright, June Squibb, and then the kid in the movie is played by Ryder Allen. It was directed by Fisher Stevens, who maybe isn't like a super well-known name, but people, I think, would know him from... He's done a lot of documentaries, like Before the Flood with Leonardo DiCaprio. And I think he did The Cove, which I think it might have won an Oscar for a best documentary back in 2010. So he's maybe not a well-known name. Person, but he's been in Hollywood for a while. So this is the story. It's kind of a, would you call it a coming of age? I'm trying to put it in a category. It's a drama for sure.
Yeah. Typically when I think of coming of age, I think that's like the main character. Like in their younger years. So like, I mean, it's a transformative movie for Justin Timberlake's character, but I wouldn't necessarily say coming of age. It's not what I think of.
It's redemptive. It's a redemptive, inspirational story. So Justin Timberlake plays an ex-con who moves to his hometown, moves in with his grandma or his aunt. I feel bad that grandma. I can't remember. Grandma, played by June Squibb. And on their property is a trailer owned by Juno Temple. Shout out to Ted Lasso. She plays Keeley in Ted Lasso. Yep. And she lives there with her son and like kind of boyfriend, not the son's father, but a boyfriend who's the mayhem guy from the Allstate
commercials.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So she's like living on June Squibb's property in her trailer park, raising her son. And, her mom or the Juno Temple, like is a drug addict. Alcoholic, she just goes on weekends and leaves her son behind, who then moves into the house with June Squibb, like when that happens, and takes care of him. And so that happens at the beginning of the movie. And so Ryder Allen's character, the kid, moves in, his name is Sam, moves in to the house while his mom is away. And Justin Timberlake initially is kind of that typical, stereotypical macho guy, you know, telling the kid to stop being so flamboyant because he's a very, you know, charismatic and flamboyant type boy or kid. And Justin Timberlake's like, no, that's not what a man is. Stop doing that. So very prototypical stuff like that. But then eventually they warm up to each other. June Squibb's character dies. So that's when Justin Timberlake really has to start taking care of the kid and they really start connecting. And then, you know, it does become a little cliche at times where like you kind of know where it's going to go. Oh, mom comes back. They fight over the kid. Who is going to win in the end? It, you know, it has a happy ending per se. There's struggles along the way of picking on the kid, this and that. So it is cliche at times, but I think it's different enough, or the acting is good. And I don't want to say good enough, but it's really good to the point of I didn't really care that the story was going to be pretty predictable and cliche. I still very much enjoyed this movie, basically because of the performances of Justin Timberlake, and the writer was really good as Sam. The story was different enough, and the type of kid that writer was, I mean, we don't see on screen too often.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I just think it's always heartwarming seeing a kid being accepted as who he is and having other people defend it. Maybe it's just as new parents, maybe that's just something I notice more. But I'm always going to enjoy seeing that on screen. So I really enjoyed this movie, even if like people would maybe call it a, you know, a story that's maybe been done before, or, you know, we've seen it a million times. I think there are enough differences in the characters and the environment and stuff like that, that I thought it was a really, really good movie.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Especially the point that, like the kid himself, Sam, like, he was such an interesting character, and like, he was like, I mean, he questioned himself every now and then, but for the most part, like, unapologetically himself, like, really came down to, like, this TV show that he likes. And, you know, at one point, Justin Timberlake, is like, you know, shows for girls, right? But, like, he doesn't care. Like, it's, I don't even remember if it's unicorns or what, but it's like these...
Yeah, I think they're fairies.
Yeah. That's what it was, fairies. And it's been a little while since we've watched it. You know, the kid is just, he really likes the fairies, and he doesn't see what problem there is with that. And I think because the kid is so assured in himself, like, that helps Justin Timberlake kind of warm up to him. And then once, so Justin Timberlake becomes a janitor at the school where Sam is a student, and he kind of sees him day in and day out and how the kids treat him. And it's, ends up being one of the kid's parents, one of Justin Timberlake's old friends, who kind of messes around with him. And that's when he really is like, no, I've got to do everything I can to protect Sam and take care of him.
Because, yeah, he develops a relationship with one of Sam's teachers. And, you know, she's, like, against him fighting anyone. But, yeah, I mean, I understand the reaction. He finds out that, yeah, it's his old high school friend, the parent of the kid, and he beats it. There's a scene, he just literally goes to the bar where he's at and beats the shit out of him. And that's where it gets interesting, because someone else is at that bar, another high school friend, who is a current cop in the town, is there as well. And that's when, because the whole time you're kind of wondering, like, what did Justin Timberlake go to prison for? And that's when semi-revealed, like, a kind of a B-plot of the movie, is he goes up to the current cop, but old high school friend, and, like, basically threatens him and tells him, like, you're not going to, like, charge me on beating the shit out of this guy or doing anything, because we find out Justin Timberlake went to jail because he broke into a house, like, someone's house, and, like, ended up getting arrested for it, but he wasn't there alone. Like, this current cop broke in with him, but Justin Timberlake took the fall for it. So you kind of make that discovery at the time, too. But, it's good that some more of the cliche. The mom does return, like, I kind of assumed she would. They go to court over, like, who's going to be the guardian of Sam. Sam wants to be with Justin Timberlake. It's pretty clear. He even kidnaps him at a certain point and kind of just drives away. And it's an interesting thing of, you know, one thing about this movie is, you know, maybe something that isn't overdone or is that I genuinely liked about it is, you get stuck in this rock and a hard place of this kid clearly isn't being raised in a good environment, but she is his mom, so legally you just can't do anything about it. Like, he takes Sam and they just drive away in a car, but it's you can't do anything. Like, that's kidnapping. You're going to be arrested and you're an ex-felon. So he does return home and hands him over, and, you know, they work around it so she doesn't prosecute him. But that has to be such a terrible feeling. Yeah. Like, this kid, you want to help this kid, but you can't really do anything about it without the mom's consent. And, you know, she just isn't giving that up. So it was tough. I mean, in the end, she does. She hands over the guardianship to Justin Timberlake. And the last shot of the movie is them walking into school together. And, you know, it's nice and heartwarming. It has a happy ending, but yeah, it's, you know, a little rocky along the way. So any other parting thoughts or favorite moments of the movie? I highly recommend it. It's on Apple TV, which I don't think a lot of people have out of all the streaming networks, but if you want to do a free trial, check it out and then get rid of it. Like, that's that works, or you can always do that. But I do highly recommend it, even though it is a familiar storyline. I think there's enough differences, and you see Justin Timberlake in a new light, I think, acting wise.
He did a really good job in this, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in his other roles, like, I feel like he more or less played himself, but this was a, like, deeper, like, it was a character with more depth.
Yeah.
And I think he did it really well.
Yeah, I think before this, people would think of Social Network as, like, the Justin Timberlake acting movie.
Yeah.
But he's still kind of himself in that to an extent. He has those comedic moments. I mean, I shouldn't say himself. Like, I assume Justin Timberlake is a funny guy because whenever I see him in pro-ams or things like that, I mean, it could be him playing it to the crowd, but he's always that quirky, funny guy.
Yeah.
But Sean Parker is that, like, a little bit of himself in that. This is, I mean, like, no jokes almost throughout the movie. He's very, like you said, deep, conflicted, multiple levels to him, straight dramatic role. And it's awesome to see him in this. I listened to an interview with the director, Fisher Stevens. Mm-hmm. He said, listen, like, this movie doesn't get made if Justin Timberlake isn't in it. They're very low budget, no trailers for the stars. Like, mm-hmm. You're kind of just, you show up to work, and you have a kid as a star, which there's child labor laws if he can only work so many hours a day. So they're very limited and small budget in making this, and he's like, Justin Timberlake isn't in it, then it doesn't get made. So that's pretty awesome that he was, one, willing to make this movie, and two, I mean, he knocked it out of the park and was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. And it was, one thing that I think was really heartwarming, too, is, like, how many people showed up for Sam. So, like, his mom wasn't there, but, you know, June Squibb kind of took him in when you know, the mom was...
Smaller role, but she's really good.
And so, you know, she'd take him to church and stuff. I'm like, okay, you gotta get dressed up, let's go to church, that sort of thing. And then Justin Timberlake, you know, plays a bigger role. But then you mentioned the teacher, too. And, you know, she knew that Sam really wanted to dress as one of these fairies for Halloween, and so at school, Sam comes dressed as a fairy with all the other girls at his table, and the three of them are so happy about it, and, you know, having a good time. The teacher dresses up, like, as a guy.
She does it because the other kids are making fun of him as a girl, but then, the teacher shows up as a guy, and is like, oh, what of it?
Yeah, exactly. So it was really cool to see, like, Sam supported by a bunch of different people.
And that's, like, the heartwarming stuff where... Yeah. I'm just going to enjoy watching that no matter what, which is, like, why this is a good movie is, I don't know if you'd call it cliche, maybe it is, but it's just so heartwarming where I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. So, exactly.
What score would you give this? Or you told me beforehand, so.
I don't remember.
I gave an 8.6, you gave an 8.5. So we're very close on that. So highly recommend Palmer. You gotta, if you need to have Apple TV to watch it, but if you already have it, for sure watch it. If you don't, but it sounds intriguing, just do a free trial, then get rid of it later. Mm-hmm. So,
and watch Ted Lasso while you're at it too.
Yes. Another plug for Ted Lasso. Alright, great. So up next we've got I Care a Lot, which is a Netflix movie distribution, whatever you want to call it. It stars Rosamund Pike in a familiar-ish, hateable role. This premiered at Toronto International Film Festival in September of 2020, but it premiered on Netflix and Amazon Prime outside the U.S. On February 19th, 2021. Rosamund Pike won a Golden Globe for this role, Best Actress in a comedy or musical. Would you classify this as a comedy or musical?
I mean, it's like a dark comedy, I suppose.
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, I don't want to say criticisms, but mixed reviews in this movie is it a black or dark comedy or not? Like, what is it? Some people classify, like, the movie, the Wikipedia page classifies it as a black comedy, so that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a thriller, crime, drama at the same time. But,
yeah.
But whatever. Like, Rosamund Peck is great, so she got her award, so you know, I'm not trying to disgruntle that at all. But she plays another dislikable character, a con artist who is kind of scamming retirees or older people out of their money. So when I first read or heard...
She's, like, scamming the system.
Yeah. So when I first heard about this movie, and I basically saw a one-sentence summary of Rosamund Pike plays a con artist who, like, meets her match in Diane Weiss' character. That was the only sentence I saw. So when we started watching this movie... And I realized...
Because you hadn't watched the trailer, right?
No, I hadn't seen anything on this movie. And when we started watching it, and I realized I was picturing her as, like, a villain, like, a illegal con artist type person.
Yeah.
Like, someone who scams people, like, walks up to them, scams them, like, in very illegal, subtle ways. But she is, like, almost the head of a company. Like, she is doing this in legal ways. I was very surprised.
It is legal. And it's one of those things that's scary to think about, because someone could do this.
Yeah, like, I was picturing her as, like, a one-woman show con artist type person. But this is, she's got connections in multiple businesses, and she has, like, a company behind her where she is legally scamming people out of their money, where she, like... She has a connection with a doctor who she makes a deal with a doctor who then goes to a judge and says one of her patients isn't fit to live by themselves anymore. And then recommends.
So what she does, like, if we take a step back, is she finds elderly people who, like, she acts as their legal guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she kind of scams, like, if we use Diane Weiss, for example. And you mentioned she's got this network of doctors and other people that she knows, administrators at, like, nursing homes and assisted living facilities, and they're like, hey, here's someone, they don't have any children, their, you know, spouse is deceased, and basically, like, gets the doctor to state to a judge, oh, yeah, this person isn't fit to make decisions for themselves, like, we need to hire, or we need to appoint a legal guardian for this person. And she always does it under the guise of, oh, this is an emergency request, so the person doesn't even need to be in court.
No lawyer needs to represent them.
Yeah, no lawyer needs to represent them. And so she just, and that's how she takes guardianship of Diane Weiss' character. She basically says, oh, yep, she can't make decisions for herself. And so shows up to her house and says, hey, the court has appointed me as your guardian. So, hey, we found this wonderful place for you to be in assisted living. And like you said, she knows the administrators and says, okay, change her meds and do this and cut back on her food, give her soup and pudding only, like shit like this. And sells their house.
I'd say she sells their house for, like, her own pocket, but then she makes sure to do this to rich people so that she can charge them hourly rates. Like, that's how she gets them on a regular basis. So it was pretty insane. Like, this movie caught my attention right away, quick. Like, I was very much like, okay, I'm into this.
It hits the ground running.
Yeah, I was very much surprised in a good way. I was very intrigued. But then you quickly find out Diane Weiss has connections. Peter Dinklage is in this movie. You don't really know his relationship with her. But you find out, like, someone shows up to Diane Weiss' house and is, like, a cab driver. And he's like, I'm here to pick her up. And they're like, oh, no, she doesn't live here anymore. And then he just leaves. And then he meets up with Peter Dinklage. Clearly, she was supposed to meet with him. You don't know why or anything. And you can tell he's a very important person. He's got bodyguards. He's in a limo or whatever. And it's like, okay, something's going on here.
They're meeting in a parking ramp. Yeah. So it's like, you know, something shady is going down.
so you find, because Rosamund Pike's here was told, like, she has no family, no kids, no anything.
She was never married.
Yeah, so you're like, who are these people? And one of my favorite scenes is when they send a lawyer in to negotiate with Rosamund Pike.
Mm-hmm.
And he's this really sleazy lawyer, fast-talking guy. But it was probably, like, maybe my favorite scene because, I don't know, just that discussion, that back and forth where, you know, he knows, like, what's going on, but he knows that Rosamund Pike doesn't, and she's very naive of, like, no, I'm not letting her go, and he's just offering her money, like, let her out of this now, otherwise you will be destroyed, basically. You know, I just loved that exchange. I thought it was really intriguing, really, because you still don't fully know what's going on, but clearly these people have power. They're sending him this lawyer, you know, and then she turns them down basically out of pride. Like, I'm not going to let her go. And he leaves saying, you're going to remember this moment because you're going to have like a beaten up face. Like, you're going to have no face. You're going to have like all your money is going to be stripped from you. So I don't know. This is really intriguing. Spoiler alert from here on out for this movie, but you find out that Peter Dinklage is her son, but she isn't the person that, like, her real name isn't whatever name is Jennifer Peterson that is being portrayed. She is, you know, a criminal or mobster's mom, but, you know, he faked his own death years and years ago, so to protect his mom, like, he stole an identity for her.
Yeah.
So he's a Russian, like, mobster, and she's his mom. So it's this back and forth, initially, like, legally back and forth of, you know, we're going to go to court and try to get her out of this home. But, you know, without revealing himself, it's hard to do and it can't be done. So the first half of the movie, to me, is amazing and really caught my intrigue. The second half really is still really good, but becomes just a straight up thriller of I'm going to try to kill her. She gets away and she tries getting away from him. And then the movie takes a turn where they start working together. Like, Peter Dinklage is impressed and he's like, if you let my mom go, like, we're just going to become partners and make this scam of becoming legal guardians like more.
Which I did not see coming.
No, I didn't see coming. How did you feel about it at that time? Without knowing what happens at the very, very end, how did you feel about it?
I hated it just because I'm like, God, like, how can you keep going? Like, this is awful. Like, the things that they're doing is awful, but, like, you understood it. It's like those couples that, like, fight all the time, but, like, they just love fighting with each other and it works for them, so it's like, God, I could never do that, but I guess it works for you. Like, that's almost the feeling I got.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we mentioned this on our last, like, full episode with the Golden Globes. Like, she, Rosamund Pike, with this and Gone Girl, like, she plays characters where, like, she's so icy and so manipulative that you cheer for the other, like, nasty people in the story, too.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's a movie with no good guy.
No, there's no, yeah, exactly.
So I've heard people say, like, they wish, because we were rooting for the mob, like, Peter Dinklage all the time. I've heard people say they wish that the Peter Dinklage character was more hateable to have a true you're not rooting for anyone factor, but it didn't bug me as much.
No.
But yeah, so they become partners. They get in this situation, too, because Rosamund Pike is able to kidnap him, and then she becomes his legal guardian. Because he's a John Doe, because he doesn't have an identity, so a weird twist there. I heard other criticisms of, these are some really dumb mobsters, like, how is this happening? But it's a, you know, if you do consider it a black or dark comedy, that's, you can kind of overlook that a little bit. Is that kind of
the humor to it?
Yeah, or just kind of, yeah, stupidity, humor, whatever you want to look at it. But, no, for me, I did really enjoy this movie, so, yeah, they become partners. There's this montage of her becoming, like, the CEO of this giant company. She becomes a billionaire. She's a super important person. And at this point, I feel like 99% of the people watching this movie are probably pissed. Like, this is not the outcome I want for this. Like, we hate this character. We don't want to see her win, which I 100% agreed with. And then the last scene of the movie is a character shows up from the beginning of the movie who is, like, a victim of her scam, but from before Diane Wiest. And he shoots Rosamund Pike's character because he's like, my mom died and I wasn't even able to see her because, you know, the mom was one of her victims where she took all her money, cut off the entire family. So he shoots Rosamund Pike and kills her there, right then and there, and that's how the movie ends. I gotta think most, like, you don't want to root for someone to die in, like, real life, obviously, but this is a movie. Got to feel like 9,900% of people were pretty happy to see that happen. I'm happy she didn't. She kind of won in the end, but she died, so, like, she doesn't obviously win. My only thing is, I wish the ending would have been a little different. Like, I didn't love the idea of, like, she kind of does win. Like, she dies, which has recovered it for me. But there were some things in the second half of the movie that I wish would have gone a little different. But overall, like, the ending was fairly satisfying.
Yeah. For me, the thing that I enjoy with these types of thrillers, if you will, is just seeing all the ways that people can, like, scam the system.
Yeah, and no, 100%. I don't mean...
It's frustrating, yeah, but it's so fascinating.
And I don't mean to cut you off, but that's why I loved the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
All of that was in the first half. The whole scam of becoming the legal guardian of someone and taking... That was so fascinating to me, and that is why it hooked me right away. Mm-hmm. But then the second half just becomes this cat and mouse thriller. Like,
silly.
Like,
sometimes.
Silly, and I've seen this before. Like, oh, let's put her in a car unconscious. We're going to put booze in there, make it seem like she's drunk, you know. And then she escapes, goes to her apartment, finds her partner there, and saves her life. Like, this whole cat and mouse, and then she kidnaps Peter Dinklage. Like, all this stuff I've seen in a movie before. Mm-hmm. It was still, like, good, but they kind of got away from the whole thing of the scam.
Yeah.
Which is what was fascinating to me,
I did like, though, like, that's how she ended up getting guardianship of Peter Dinklage, yeah, though.
Which was my oh shit moment in the second half. Yes. But that was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish they would have kept the scam more of the forefront of, like, does she get caught? Like, is this too much for her? Do they find a way around the legal guardianship? You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's my critique of it, of I wish they would have kept that going in the second half a little bit more. I thought it became more of a quote-unquote generic thriller cat and mouse movie.
Yeah.
But still really good. The scores for this, you gave it an 8.1. I gave it an 8.2. The first half was close to a 9 for me, but because the second half, while still good, just didn't keep my intrigue up, it was a little bit of a lower score. But still, highly recommend it. Again, it's on Netflix, so pretty easy for people to watch. It was directed, I don't think I said who directed it, it was directed by Jay Blakeson. They wrote it. That name I hadn't really heard of before. I tried looking at their filmography, and it's a couple short films and then a couple movies that I had never heard of. So, you know, kind of the first big hit for Jay Blakeson, so that's kind of cool. But yeah, we'll see if Rosamund Pike gets an Oscar nomination. Maybe not. I'm looking at the four for sures who are getting nominated, you know, in my opinion, are Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Vanessa Kirby, Pieces of a Woman, Frances McDormand for Nomadland, and Carrie Mulligan for Promising Young Woman. Those four are, like, locks to me. And that doesn't even count the woman who won the Golden Globe for drama. I can't...
For the Billie Holiday movie. I can't remember her name.
And then Amy Adams has a nomination at the SAGs for Hillbilly Elegy, which I hear is not a good movie. So I don't know who that fifth person will be. Maybe it'll be Rosamund Pike. But
she was nominated for Gone Girl, wasn't she?
Yeah, that was her. And a lot of people thought she should have won. So some people kind of view maybe she'll get a nomination as somewhat of a makeup for that.
Yeah.
But we'll find out. Very good. Highly recommend. So, yeah, I Care a Lot on Netflix right now if you're in the U.S. All right. So then next up is Nomadland starring Frances McDormand. I think this is streaming on Hulu. In the U.S., at least, right now. But it's starring Frances McDormand. It was directed by Chloe Zhao, if I'm saying that correctly, who is directing or has directed one of the next MCU movies in Eternals, so kind of cool. And really, so Frances McDormand, like I said, stars in it. The only other actor in this is David Strathairn, who plays... You know, he's a smaller role, but plays, like, a friend or somewhat of a romantic interest for Frances McDormand. But it basically is a character study or lifestyle study for nomads in the U.S. It does take place in early 2010s, 2011 era of kind of the recession or just this region of the world where... You know, a lot of labor force jobs were shut down, mining specifically for the movie. A mine was shut down.
Yeah, yep, specifically. That was, like, what was crazy to me was the movie started with title cards saying that this gypsum like mining company shut down, and like within a few years this entire town was basically wiped off the map, and the zip code was like removed from the postal system because like no one lived there anymore.
Yeah.
You just go, oh wow. Okay. So Frances McDormand was one of the people who lived in that town and kind of picks up with her like moving out, moving on.
Yeah. Like it's her taking stuff out of the storage unit and putting them in her van. And then she goes and works at Amazon, probably like parks her van at a trailer park s type place, and I guess Amazon pays for it as long as she's working there. It's like a holiday time, so they need extra help. And it's basically her going to a couple locations, living out of this van, but trying to find work like at these places along the way. And it's trying to show like the lifestyle of nomad, the modern day nomad living out of a car or a van or what have you. And it's kind of one of those movies where there's a plot, but there isn't a plot. Like you're kind of just following this person along the way. There isn't a huge like a climax or anything like that in the movie. But still, still really good. Yeah, premiered. It was on Hulu February 19th. I don't think I said the date. February 19th, 2021. It premiered on Hulu. It won. I think it's a front runner for winning Best Picture and Director going into the Academy Awards, which the nominations aren't out yet, but that's, I think, the consensus going in. I don't, like, because there isn't a huge plot there, basically I'm just going, what did you think of the movie and the different points of it? Because it's her working at Amazon, and then it's her following a friend out to kind of the middle of nowhere where they meet this, like, head honcho, nomad, like Bob Wells, I think was his name. And then she goes to work at a national park with this friend, and David Strathairn is there. And then she goes and stays with his family for a little while, and then she gets back on the road, and it's kind of like she goes back to Amazon Prime. And so it's like a year in her life, and it's, you know, that for the most part, that's it. Like, it's just you seeing her on this life, like this year-long life journey of hers. So what did you think of Nomadland?
To me, it felt like almost like a dramatization of like a documentary. And it is, in the sense that like it's based on, you know, like this real town that basically shut down, doesn't exist anymore, and people who actually spend their life doing this. I feel like it's hard to like judge it compared to, especially like the last two movies we just talked about, right? Like those are very clear like plot driven stories, and this is just a snapshot, basically.
It's like Boyhood ish. Boyhood takes over years and years, but it's just following these people in life. There's no climax or anything.
No, it's just here's a point in time that you follow them. Yeah, exactly. It's for me the strangely like the interesting stuff was kind of her like setting up her van and just like being in her van, just like the stuff that she did, and you know, she's like, oh, these are, you know, I've got a few plates, like this is China that my dad left for me, and just the little things she does, little creature comforts she has.
Yeah, like I liked when she was showing her van to her friend, like this is where I put this, and this is like an old toolkit where when you open the lid, it's actually like a table, and here's where the China. Yeah, like that was intriguing.
Yeah, you know, and just like finding different places, like, oh, I know I can park here overnight, or like you said, Amazon was giving like stipends or whatever for people, you know, hooked up at the RV park kind of thing, like where she had her truck, and like that kind of aspect was somewhat interesting to me. It's kind of like those TV shows like Tiny House Nation, where they like build tiny houses and here's how you make a living in this super tiny space. That was more interesting for me, like her in the physical van rather than her like traveling around, I guess.
Yeah. And I do think it's interesting, this movie is, I didn't know going in whether they're going to portray being a nomad or this situation as a positive or a negative.
Sure.
Because she's in this situation because like the whole town lost their job.
Yeah.
And she lost her house. But, so you'd think it's going to be negative, like, oh, you're going to feel sympathetic towards her because she's living out of this truck or this car and she doesn't want to. But that's not necessarily true. Like, a lot of the people that they run into, they want to do this. This is the life, maybe not that they wanted, but, like, at this point in time in their lives, they want.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very prideful, too, where there's a couple times in the movie there's people saying, you can stay here if you want, like, I have a warm bed or whatever. And she's like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm good in my van. And some of that is maybe pride of, like, I don't want a handout. But part of it's like, no, like, this is my lifestyle and I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave it. So I'm
comfortable here. This is my space. Yeah.
That was interesting that it wasn't, sometimes it felt both positive and negative, but overall, like, it was kind of like, this is what she kind of wants. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah, you're right. Like, she, I never get the sense that she, like, feels sorry for herself. Like, oh, that sucks that this happened to me or this happened to me. She seems to kind of carry on with, okay, like, this is something, and as a consequence, I'm living in my van, and I like doing that.
Mm-hmm. Because there are, like, it does kind of get sad throughout the movie of her friends, like, kind of, I don't want to say leave her, but they go off and do their own thing. So her main friend, who kind of introduces her to Amazon Prime and then, like, the National Park job, she leaves and she's like, I may never see you for a while. And she, like, goes back home or goes and does her own thing. So it's kind of like, it felt isolated to me. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if I could do that because it's just her in this van kind of in the middle of nowhere by herself. And it just felt very lonesome to me.
Yeah.
But then she'll goes and sees David Strathairn and his family and she realizes that he's basically done living out of a car because he wants to be with his family and his grandchildren. Now she's like, you know, you have a flat on your car. He goes, oh, I guess I didn't notice. I haven't been living out of that for a while now. Yep. So it's kind of like he found his place not being a nomad. And then she's kind of back being by herself. And I don't know, like, I don't know if I was supposed to feel bad for her, but I felt lonesome in that, and maybe that's just because, like, I couldn't do it, and I would need people, familiar people around me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought that was interesting. But, yeah, I thought it was good. I don't know what I was expecting going into it. I wasn't really expecting to be blown away. I knew it was kind of that front runner going in. It's not my favorite movie of the year. Like, I didn't love it. I still thought it was good, but this isn't a movie where I watch it and I'm like, yeah, that's best picture. I'm in love with it. I think Frances McDormand is fantastic. She's maybe the best part of the movie. Obviously, she deserves a nomination. You know, if she wins, great. I haven't seen all the other nominees, but she's fantastic in it. You know, there's not a huge story of it like we've described, so I don't really foresee a screenplay win for this movie. The directing is fantastic, like the shots inside the van where you kind of feel like you are Frances McDormand looking in this van and some of the stuff we talked about is great. So Chloe Zhao, I think, should win Best Director, which would only be the second female to ever win, so that would be awesome to see. But yeah, I thought it was good. Didn't love it, though. I guess is what I'm saying.
That's how I feel about it too. It was enjoyable, but I wasn't blown away, and it's not something that really stuck with me. I watched it and I was like, okay, I'm glad I saw it, but I'm not gonna go out of my way to recommend it to someone. Like, you have to see.
Yeah,
this movie.
I don't think it's a movie everyone would love or everyone would enjoy to see. I think it's kind of important. You get to learn this lifestyle or these type. Group of people that are out there that are probably not, you know, a lot of people don't know their lifestyle or know about them
too
much. Yeah,
they're not well represented anymore. Yeah.
Which, I mean, we said David Strathairn and Frances McDormand, they're the only actors, and everyone else is a real life nomad that they decided to put in the movie to kind of give their story. Which is another thing I noted, the way they framed the narrative of this movie, it basically gave each of the real life nomads a chance to tell their story. I felt like every time you met someone, like, they're telling their story. So it's kind of you're learning about this real-life person, you know, but it kind of made sense in the narrative of the movie, which I thought was kind of cool. But, yeah, I don't know. I just – it'll probably win Best Picture, but I don't think it's a notable Best Picture win. I think it's fairly educational, and, you know, if you're interested in seeing it, for sure see it, but I don't think it's a movie everyone would love, which maybe that's, like, should a Best Picture winner be that? Should it be, like, a unanimously loved movie or not? I don't know, but yeah, that's how I feel about it. I gave it an 8.5. It's kind of in that great movie range for me, but it isn't, like, a movie I'm in love with. How are you feeling? What would you give it?
Oh, probably around, like, an 8, I think.
Okay.
It's fine.
8's fine for you?
I guess.
Okay. So, yeah, it's on Hulu. I still think people... It isn't that long of a movie.
No.
So, I think people, if it sounds interesting, it's kind of a case study of a lifestyle. If that sounds interesting to you, for sure, check it out. But yeah, probably the front runner going into the Oscars. So next up, the Eddie Murphy, I think it was Amazon Prime, just came out. We were getting it mixed up with Hulu and Amazon Prime.
I get Amazon Hulu confused all the time.
But yeah, it was Prime Video, March 4th, 2021, coming to America, the number two, so the sequel, the first one came out in 1988, so another one of those movies where they're kind of pulling the nostalgia thread on you,
yeah,
making a sequel 30 years later or whatever. We just recently watched the first Coming to America, which, I'd seen it before. I think that movie's awesome.
I hadn't seen it, and I really enjoyed it, the first one. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's good.
So, this is a sequel. A lot of the same actors are back. In fact, probably all of them, all the big names are back.
I think everyone, yeah.
Yeah, are back. James Earl Jones back for a little bit at the beginning. But yeah, Arsenio Hall, Eddie Murphy, the two big names who they do dual roles in it are back. Some new fresh blood in Leslie Jones, Tracy Morgan. And then Jermaine Fowler plays the son of Akeem in this movie. So the plot is... Movies like this... The plot's always interesting because I feel like they have to shoehorn in stuff to, like, give them a reason to do whatever.
Reason for us to do a sequel?
Yeah, and, they retcon him being Akeem, sleeping with and impregnating Leslie Jones. I don't know what I was expecting. This is probably the best they could have done, but it's a pretty outrageous thing where... You know, because you knew in the first one that he didn't sleep with anyone.
Yeah.
And there's no reason he'd have a long-lost son.
Yeah.
But, they shoehorn in this story where Arsenio Hall got him, hooked him up with Leslie Jones. And while Arsenio was sleeping with her friend, Leslie Jones got Akeem high, so high to the point where he didn't even remember sleeping with her or thought it was a dream where she was like some wild boar.
Yeah.
So they had a one-night stand, she got pregnant, and, Jermaine Fowler plays his son, and Akeem goes to America to retrieve him and then bring him back to Zamunda to be the prince and heir to the throne because he's getting a lot of political pressure from Wesley Snipes, who's new in this movie.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes.
As a general of a neighboring country where he's...
Nextoria.
I forgot that was the name.
Such an awful name. Funny though.
So Wesley Snipes is the brother of the woman in the first movie who he tells to bark and hop on one foot. I can't remember if they said the name of the country in the first movie.
I don't remember that coming up.
Yeah. So I don't know. I should have looked it up. I can't remember if they did or didn't, but whatever. So he's the brother of her. So a little nod there. They show her and she's still hopping on one foot and 30 years later.
Yeah.
So getting a lot of political pressure from Wesley Snipes' character, General Izzy, to bring their two families together. And, so he's basically, Eddie Murphy wants to find his own heir or have his own heir to kind of keep the throne in the family name at least. So that's why he gets Jermaine Fowler's character, Lavelle, to Zamunda. Most of the movie is in Zamunda, which I wasn't sure whether to expect or not.
I liked that, though.
Yeah, which is interesting. I for the most part, liked it, too, because they didn't go too crazy with anything. But that's always interesting in made-up or fantasy.
Different.
Yeah, which is, that's true.
From the first one.
Because there's a lot that's similar in this movie, which we'll talk about maybe in a little bit. But that's always interesting in movies where there's this made-up country or place. you know, how much you show of it because it's made up. And like the first Princess Diaries, they don't show, I can't remember the name of that country.
Genovia.
They don't show a lot of it in the first one. It's in New York. But then the second one is like all in Genovia, and that movie was received. I mean, that, I'm not saying that's the reason, but you know, usually the movie where they don't show the made up country is received critically a little bit better. Whether that's the reason or not, I just see that as a trend. But so yeah, they bring him back to Zamunda, and he has to do this trial or test to prove that he can be a prince. And then while at the same time, there's this kind of gender inequality going on in Zamunda, where Eddie Murphy, Akeem has three daughters from, you know, the queen, the wife, and they're kind of being ignored for the throne because of, oh, a man has to do it. So, you know, this gender equality thing is going on at the same time. And then, you know, in the end, you know, everyone's happy, I guess, for the most part. Jermaine Fowler's character becomes an ambassador, I think, for the U.S. for Zamunda. Yeah. The oldest daughter does become queen, and everyone is kind of happy in the end. There's a lot of similar things from the first movie that happen, but I think there are enough differences and enough stuff from the new characters. Overall, I did enjoy the sequel and movie.
Yeah, and I think one thing that made it worthwhile too was that almost all of the original cast was back. Like, you had the same woman playing his wife, the same guy playing his father-in-law. Like, to see those people back, like, that made it, like, even those secondary characters, like, it made it more enjoyable to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, like, we're not just completely throwing shit together just because we want to. Like, people are on board to do this, and just it just felt better.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, so Leslie Jones is getting close to that territory of, am I getting too much Leslie Jones in in movies? Or, like, she's the supermarket sweep host now. So yeah. Am I getting too much Leslie Jones, or I'm getting tired of her?
Yeah.
Not there yet. I thought she was great in this. Tracy Morgan I thought was funny in a small role, too.
Yeah.
I thought Jermaine Fowler was fantastic in the lead.
He was good.
I think he was maybe the best part of the movie, because so much of this is a rehash or similar to the first movie to an extent, where like Eddie Murphy's character is basically acting like James Earl Jones from the first one, where he's a stubborn dad who isn't letting people.
It's all about tradition, and we can't have a woman run the family.
Yeah, so you know, I thought Jermaine, I knowing nothing about him beforehand, I thought he was really good in the movie, handled it really well. You know, he kind of is the Eddie Murphy from the first one, where he falls in love with someone he's not supposed to. He is trying to marry her, ends up marrying her in the end. But, you know, I thought a lot of it was a little, you know, predictable. He saw it coming. Like, of course he's going to fall in love with someone other than this person he's supposed to marry.
Yeah.
Of course Eddie Murphy's going to come around and, like, give him permission to do this in the end. But like, I thought there was enough from the newer people, characters in the movie, and, you know, enough humor. I thought it was an acceptable sequel,
yes.
I guess I should say. I'm not saying it's an amazing movie, but it was acceptable.
Yeah, and I think there's enough absurdity in the first one, like, you know, all of the characters that Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall play, that when you bring that absurdity into the sequel, like, it doesn't feel that out of place.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, they're, like, setting it up a little bit for you, so, yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I guess one thing to kind of put maybe what I really liked in the first one that maybe wasn't in this one is I like the fish out of water aspect of the first one, where you have these people from Zamunda in New York. They have no idea what they're doing, and this is a trope that's been done millions of times in movies, but that doesn't mean it's bad to see every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, them working at McDowell's right. in the first one and learning life in New York was funny and, you know, fascinating. I don't really get, there isn't too much of that in this. Like, yeah, you pull out people from New York and bring them to Zamunda, but for the most part, it's just Leslie Jones enjoying getting bathed by these muscular guys. And there isn't a whole lot of fish out of water moments. It's just kind of...
Yeah, and it's harder to do it when one, Zamunda's not a real country, yeah. and two, like, we don't know what it's like in an African palace.
No, and, you know? And that's where I think it's going to Zamunda, like, bringing in that fake country as the main setting can get tough.
Yep, yep.
Because you're right, like, we don't know everyday life there, so it's harder to make those mundane jokes. Mm-hmm. So, I guess that's kind of to put a pin on, like, maybe where this clearly isn't as good as the first one, and maybe where I don't know how you fix that, and maybe that's where some people are, we don't need a sequel. Like, mm-hmm. why do you... Because this definitely felt like a plot that was shoehorned into, let's just make a sequel for yeah. coming to America.
Yeah.
And then we got a wreck on him knocking up Leslie Jones. So I don't think it's necessary. I think it's, like, okay to find as a sequel. The score I gave it was a 6.3, so that's kind of in the borderline fine to good range for me. If you have Amazon Prime, like, just watch it. You'll enjoy it. Like, I yeah. can't imagine people are going to say, like, I hate this movie. Yeah, it's just going to be...
It's funny.
Yeah.
There's some good parts in it.
Yeah, so I gave it a 6.3. What about you?
Yeah, I guess 6.5, probably.
Okay, all right. You enjoyed it a little bit more than I did. So, yeah, and Wesley Snipes, who's just not in enough stuff anymore. Probably, you know, I don't know what his life is outside of movies. I know he had some trouble there for a while, but he was a nice add. To the cast. I thought he was quite enjoyable. I don't think I mentioned it, but it was directed by Craig Brewer, who, familiar name for me, he directed Hustle and Flow.
Okay.
Which, that came out in, like, 2005, won an Oscar for original song, It's Hard Out Here for yeah. a Pimp. But he also directed Dolomite Is My Name, which is another recent Eddie Murphy movie, so... Craig Brewer.
I forgot about that movie already.
Yeah. So Craig Brewer, he's a name like maybe not the everyday person would recognize, but he's done some good stuff. I like for the most part, I like Craig Brewer. So
very cool.
So yeah, so that's coming, the number 2 America, streaming on Amazon Prime right now.